ethics of science relating to the action, or rather the thinking process before action, contemplating on the actions to be taken on a special issue. The second phase is reflecting on the issue, that is, trying to deal with the problem at hand after it has been recognized. Now the question is, what are the options? We know that we need to make a decision on an action. Now, what are the options in the situation? For each options, what should be taken into account? And furthermore, how to think about these things? That's the main question in this video. Now, previously, I've mentioned that there's a number of normative theories on ethics, and I'll go through these theories in a rather fast fashion. I'll concentrate on some of the problems on those theories in a later video. However, now I would like to take an overview on how to ethically think about an issue. Now, there's a number of ways that one can approach an ethical problem. Now, one would be that we take a look at rights and obligations that are relevant in a situation. And that is, we can talk about the rights of a scientist, or we can talk about the rights of the research object, and we can talk about obligations that are involved for the scientist or doing the research, or the agent acting on a situation. And these can be approached in a number of ways. For one, there is a legal aspect. That is, one could look into the law book and see what are the legal limits of the courses of actions that one may take. Now, the legal point of view is related always to a country and the laws that are in place in each country. So the legal point of view is dependent on the location of where the research is being done. Now, there is a problem relating to this, especially if there is a research that is done across nations, and you could end up in a situation where the laws are not compatible, or they say different things and give different rights and obligations for research. So that's one problem. The mainstream view on legal rights and obligations within ethics of science community is that one should obey the laws. That is, one shouldn't do research that is against the law. So, for example, in the United States, there are some laws restricting stem cell research, and most of the ethicists would say that one shouldn't break the law. The consequence of that, by the way, is that some of the stem cell research has been done in countries where the laws are not so restricted, which obviously creates another kind of a problem for research ethics. Also, one should take into account that when the research is being published, the publisher might be abiding laws of another nation. So when planning on research, one should be aware of the the publication phase also, because that might produce a problem if the research is done according to laws that are not compatible with the ethical guidelines of a publisher. Now, from a philosophical point of view, another aspect for rights and obligations would be to look into moral rights and moral obligations. Now, ideally, legality and morality would be compatible, but that is not always the case. And I suppose most ethicists would contend that the moral plane is more fundamental than the legal plane, because legality is supposed to follow morality, and from this it follows that there might be cases where some laws are immoral because the legal system hasn't caught up with the moral plane. Also, one could discern other types of rights and obligations, such as customs. That is, it might be customary for some actor have some rights and obligations which are not specified in the law, and might not be specified in the moral sense of the word, strictly speaking. And some customs might not be relevant to morality at all. They are just arbitrary customs on how to act. However, the main point at this stage is to emphasize that the moral plane is the most important aspect when looking into rights and obligations. Now, relating to these concepts, a question might be asked. What is the relation of rights and obligations with different foundings or sources? I've already dealt with some of the issues relating to different different views on rights from the legal, moral, and customary point of view. And my idea is that morality is the most fundamental source for choosing which rights and obligations are in effect. This, however, doesn't answer the question quite completely, because one could ask the question relating to morality that what is the founding of morality? And from this, a number of questions arise. Now, first of all, some people seem to be in the opinion that morality is based on religion. And since there are different religions, this aspect would produce different kinds of rights and obligations to actors. Some people do not think that morality is based on religion, but rather on customs of a culture. That is, some people seem to be thinking that morality is based on some kind of natural law. That is, that somehow morality emerges from biology or sociology or something like that, and that has been naturally developed somehow. Now, these questions would take us to meta-ethical point of view, but we will not go there, but rather we'll just note that there could be different ideas about the source of morality in different worldviews. Instead, one thing that could be brought up in relation to the question that what is the relation of rights and obligations? This is a conceptual issue that I think that can be rather well answered from a philosophical point of view. And often one hears that a person, let's say when becoming of age, for example, on the 18th birthday, gains some rights and obligations. However, the logic of the concept of right and obligation is a bit different than this. Namely, the point is that when one actor has a right, then this corresponds to another actor's obligation, and vice versa. That is, if, say, a teacher has some right, then a student has a corresponding obligation. And also, a student might have some right, and a student, that is, a teacher, might have a corresponding obligation relating to that. Let's say that if we say that a student has a right to get feedback, then a teacher has the responsibility or obligation to give that feedback. If we say that some actor has a right, but someone else doesn't have a corresponding obligation, we could say that the right is empty or vacuous. So when looking into ethical issues in terms of rights and obligations, one should try to figure out what the rights and obligations are and how they are allocated to different agents and patients. In terms of doing science, for example, if a researcher has the obligation to inform a subject about the purpose of the research, then the subject has the right to ask for that information. So that's one aspect relating to rights and obligations that should be taken into account. Going forward with another type of aspect of looking into moral decisions, quite normally we look into actions and their consequences. And this type of idea is labeled as consequentialism in philosophy. And the basic idea is rather simple. We should choose the option that has the best consequences. This idea is rather intuitive, and we seem to be using, as human beings, we seem to be using this idea rather naturally, in the sense that whenever we look into a moral value of an action, then we consider the consequences of that action. Now, consequentialism has a number of well-known problems related to it, and we will be looking into those problems in another video. But for now, when looking into an issue relating to ethics of science, we could name consequentialist point of view one way to evaluate an action. One should realize that when comparing this to rights and obligations type of approach, in law, it necessarily doesn't specify that an action is wrong because of consequences. The law might just forbid somebody doing something. And these approaches are not necessarily matching, even though they might, but not necessarily. Another point of view towards looking into ethical issues is to refer to duties of a person, or in this case a scientist. So the approach in terms of duties would be such that the right thing to do is to fulfill one's duties. And the next question would be, what are those duties? Now, one way to answer this question would be to enumerate duties that one must fulfill when considering an action. However, listing all possible kinds of duties could prove to be impossible task. And furthermore, one might ask, why are these specific duties listed as such? A famous philosopher called Immanuel Kant, who died around 1800s, is known for his ethical standpoint that is called deontological theory. And within that, there is a sort of a maxim or super rule or categorical imperative, as it is known, according to which we should act only in accordance with that maxim through which you can at the same time will that it become a universal law. And this is a formal rule or formal statement that is to be understood in a way that whenever we consider an action, we should think whether we would want that course of action to become a universal law, that is, a law that anyone in the same situation should take that course of action. And this, I think, is a very good guideline in the sense that we should try to take a universal point of view and forget about our personal gains or emotions that might be in play in a certain situation or any other personal aspect, and try to think what is the right thing to do from a universal point of view. That is, what should anybody in that situation do? And that could give us some guidance as to choose among the possible courses of action. And the idea is that we should not follow our feelings or emotions when doing actions, and we shouldn't look into personal gains or something like that, but rather our duty is towards a universal moral law that dictates what to do. Now, this approach has its problems. It sometimes is too abstract because sometimes the question is, what should one do in a certain situation? And we could agree with the universal law or categorical imperative, but we still don't know what should that person in that situation do. Okay, moving on towards another kind of approach to ethical problems, and issues would be the so-called principles and rules approach. And this idea is that a researcher should follow the principles that are endorsed by the research community. And the principles, according to these formulations, are integrity, meticulousness, and accuracy when doing research, and also recording, presenting, and evaluating the research results. So this would be one type of an approach. And these principles would be formulated by Finnish Advisory Board on Research Integrity, and they reflect, or I think pretty well, more general aspect. I suppose that pretty much all ethicists would say that yes, these are important. Some might want to formulate these principles and rules differently, but here is one formulation. Now, naming those principles a bit more, well, in a more detailed level, you can see here, openness or transparency is one principle that should be obeyed. Recognition, giving recognition to those who deserve it. Autonomy, science is an autonomous enterprise and shouldn't be affected by outside interests or interest groups. The research shouldn't be, let's say, politically driven. Researchers should be held accountable on their actions and so forth. These would give some guidelines on how to act on a specific question or issue. One could look into these principles and see whether the course of action is in accordance with these principles. Now, this rules and principles type of approach to ethical issues invites some philosophical reflection on why are these principles, rules, and so forth mentioned and not others. What if we had a different set of principles for some reason or another? And that would invite some philosophical research to be done. Then another approach, and this is the last approach that we'll mention at this point, is a so-called virtues approach, where the idea is rather different from all the previous approaches. Now, virtue ethic is a approach to ethics that goes back to antiquity. And the idea is that a virtuous person does virtuous things. That is, a virtuous person does good things and is morally praiseable. And this does, in my opinion, ring some familiar bells, in the sense that if we talk about moral character of a person, we tend to think that virtuous people do virtuous things, and we don't always look into consequences of actions, but rather we might say that this was done by a virtuous person, or is motivated by virtuous motives. A good person is prone to do good things. And we could approach this ethics of science question as to what should we do by looking into what kind of a person is a virtuous scientist. A philosophical question on what virtues are general might take us to appraising wise people, are courageous people, good-willed people, and all that. But if we go into the science and related issues, we might want to ask, what is a virtuous scientist like, or what is a virtuous student like, or what is a virtuous teacher like? What sorts of characteristics does a scientist have? And probably we would come up with ideas that, okay, a scientist is truthful, aims at truth, is such that courageously looks into difficult research questions and is tenacious, doesn't hold back whenever small problems arise, but rather tries to work through the problems and so forth. So I think that this virtuous kind of a approach towards research ethics is rather good to think about. Now, one problem with this is that, or this approach is that, it doesn't give us necessarily specific answers to questions relating to ethical issues on specific concrete problems, but it can give us some insight as to what kinds of actions we should take, or what kinds of motives or characteristics should we base our acts on. Okay, so here is some approaches towards doing some thinking about moral issues in science. And it might seem that this is a rather complicated matter, because there is no clear-cut answer as to what should we do, but rather all sorts of different kinds of approaches towards thinking about actions is what it's involved. And I think that this picture is rather right. The ethical issues tend to be messy. It tends to turn out that there's all sorts of different aspects that need to be taken into account. And the result is that we are sometimes at loss as to what is the best course of action, and there doesn't seem to be a clear-cut answer to many of the questions, and this is just the case. And I suppose that's just one thing that we need to learn to live with. Just as in life, it seems that there are genuine moral dilemmas that don't have a specific answer. However, the philosophical concepts that are mentioned before, I think, do provide some help in thinking about the ethical issues, and that's pretty much the most that philosophy and ethics can provide for concrete action and thinking about concrete actions.